No, ladies, no underwear throwing. Vince is off this week. You'll have to keep it on till next week. Chris Stegall here. Happy to be riding side saddle, filling in for Vince, middle of the week. Hope you're doing well. You know the telephone number. That stays the same, even though you have a guest host. 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL. Trying to make sense of the news here today. Mike Pence in New Hampshire's Institute of Politics gives a speech today, and, well, let's just say it's less than helpful. What do you make of this?
If they were to call you to the committee to come and testify, talk, would you be agreeable?
Well, I would.
If you couldn't hear that, the question was if they called you to testify. Now, never mind, this is on the morning after Liz Cheney has just had her ass handed to her. She has just had her clock cleaned in Wyoming over this January 6th rot and this impeachment rot. This, I don't know that this wasn't the discussion at the Politics and Eggs event at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire, but that wasn't the question. The question to Vice President Mike Pence, if you didn't hear it, was, would you be willing to testify before the January 6th committee? Now, to be clear, I like Mike Pence. I have always liked and thought a lot of Mike Pence on balance. There is rumor that Mike Pence is also a guy that's interested in eyeing a presidential run of his own. I don't know. And I'm not here to comment on whether or not he should do that or whether he'd win if he tried. But one thing that every Republican is going to have to figure out is that you're now going to have to deal with people trying to frame you as an insurrectionist. We all are. If you vote for Trump, if you support Trump, if you voted for Trump in the past, if you think about doing it again, if you think a raid on Trump's home was unprecedented and unwarranted, you are now an insurrectionist. And all of us, whether we're talk show hosts or plumbers or former vice presidents or members of Congress or running for Senate, we're all going to have to figure out what to do about that and what we're going to do with that. Because the Democrats have figured out that this is their play now through the fall and into. In fact, there are some people that would suggest that the Democrat Party is hopeful Donald Trump will run. They want him to run because they will raise oodles and oodles and oodles of money. They want you excited about the prospect of Donald Trump running so that you will do nothing but throw your 100% support behind him. And their calculation is, not only will they get to relitigate insurrection all over again, they think that's their surest ticket to victory. They don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell he can win, and they believe that goading him into running and goading you into supporting him is their best path to a second term for Grandpa, this withering old husk that we're pretending is president now. That's what I think. So having said all that, former Vice President Pence is asked this morning if he would support being called to testify before this sham committee.
If it was an invitation to participate, I would consider it. But you've heard me mention the Constitution a few times this morning. On the Constitution, we have three co-equal branches of government. And any invitation to be directed to me, I would have to reflect on the unique role that I was serving in as Vice President. It'd be unprecedented in history for a vice president to be summoned.
That's right. It would be unprecedented for a vice president to be summoned, and it would be unprecedented for a vice president to accept it, Mr. Pence. And it's why you should say no. You know, I realize, and listen, I'm going to be straight up honest with you folks, I have no time for attacks on Mike Pence. Because I think there was no finer or more loyal a public servant to Donald Trump than Mike Pence. And I know everybody shouts at the end, yeah, but the end, but at the end. Okay, but no matter what you think of, but at the end, whether you think Mike Pence could have singularly stopped all of this or not, you cannot deny, there is no denying, if you're going to be a fair judge of history, there was no more loyal footman of Donald Trump's than Mike Pence. Yeah, but not when it counted. I hear you. I get it. I'm not relitigating January 6th, okay? I'm just not. That's not the point of my bringing this up. I'm giving a little and I'm taking a little, all right? So stay along with me here. I think Mike Pence has been one of the greatest lieutenants, one of the greatest defenders, one of the most loyal at his side Donald Trump supporters there ever was, Mike Pence was. And so I think a lot of unnecessary shots and beating up on Mike Pence post-Trump presidency has not been great. It's not a great look. I think at best, just kind of holding fire on one another is the best play for these two guys because they're inseparable. They're going to be tied to the hip. That's just the way it's going to be. Trump chose Pence, never going to be able to detach himself from it. That's the way it is. He chose him. And Pence did his role and did it beautifully. Never, ever crossed Trump, not once. Yeah, but not until the end. Not what I'm talking about. So having said all that, I actually think Mike Pence was a fine, fine vice president. And I think on balance is a fine, decent guy. However, what's disappointing to me now, I say all that to say, watching Mike Pence now coming out and making big, bold stands of support for the FBI raiding his former boss's home, that bothers me a lot. Former Vice President Mike Pence denounced Republican calls to defund the FBI following last week's raid on former President Donald Trump, saying it was just wrong, and just as wrong as Democrat-led efforts to defund the police. We can hold the Attorney General accountable for the decision that he made without attacking the rank-and-file law enforcement personnel of the FBI. Yeah, you know, I'm getting so sick and tired of this pat throwaway line of we must continue to be deferential and say how much we admire and we appreciate the great work of the field work of the rank and file of the men. What is this perfunctory throwaway line that we all have to say? Is this, you know, it's this tired thing where we always, you know, we all have to, I do not support violence or threats in any way. I do not support ransacking the Capitol in any way, but I get so tired of the qualifying. Nobody's taking issue with guys in some field office in Omaha at the FBI. Okay? We all understand the rank and file of the FBI are good people who blah, blah, blah. Okay. Like, that's not what anybody is questioning here. Everyone understands that the authoritarian goons in Washington, D.C., that sit inside the upper echelons of the Department of Justice, these are the guys and women that we have troubles with. Everyone understands that. There's no need to keep saying, I do not believe we should attack the FBI because there are fine, patriotic men and women who do the hard work every day. Shut up. We all understand that Merrick Garland and that loathsome little toad before him, well, at least the FBI, guys like James Comey and Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and all these career bureaucrat FBI DOJ officials who you all know their names and you all know what they've done and you all know they're loathsome partisan little toads. That's who we're talking about. So let's just save us the, you know, flag waving and the patriotic jingoism about the fine men and women who wake up every day nobly saluting the flag and going to work for mom and apple pie and golden retrievers and okay, Mike, enough. What Mike Pence should have said when talking about this, he had an opportunity to do two things at this event today, and I wished he'd have taken them. And I understand now that he's moving into some sort of maybe political sphere again where he's thinking about maybe taking another run somewhere, running for something. I don't know. And he feels now that he has to say this stuff, which is disappointing if that's where this is going. But there are two things that if you want to be a Republican in good standing, you now must say. And that is, I do not support attacks on the FBI and the good men and women who, and anyone who is suggesting that the FBI are bad people or anything other than above board and doing their great work. So that's the first thing you've got to say. And the second thing you've got to say is you're willing to play ball with the January 6th committee and that you think it's above board, that you think it's legitimate, that you think that this is still something we ought to be litigating and discussing, January 6th. And so I have to say that while I think Mike Pence has been treated a little shabbily. If I'm to be wholly honest with you, that's my impression. I know a lot of this audience disagrees. I'm not here to pick a fight about Mike Pence. I really am not. I say all that to say I think Mike Pence starting to wade back into this kind of, you know, backhanded slap of Donald Trump and everybody who supports him thing sounds more like Liz Cheney, and that's really gross and unfortunate because that's not, I really don't believe that's who Mike Pence is. I believe him to be a true principled conservative guy. I think he believed and stood with every bit of policy that Donald Trump wanted to enact. But if you're not able to say the Department of Justice way overstepped and behaved in a completely abusive, obscene manner in raiding a former president's home, if you can't say that without these stupid qualifiers, I think that we must stay focused on holding the attorney general accountable without attacking the rank and file law enforcement personnel. Well, how about this? A lot of the rank and file FBI stormed into Mar-a-Lago for 9 hours. 30 of them or something? So those are all rank and file. Are all of those men and women good and decent rank and file citizens of the FBI? I don't know that I think that's true. You know what I'd like to think? I'd like to think that if I were a member in good standing of the FBI and I worked for them and they came to me and they said, we need you to storm the former president's home. And I say, to do what? And they say, grab everything you see related to him being president on paper. I'd like to think, as a good member in good standing and a patriot doing my duty and waving the flag and saluting mom and apple pie and God bless America, oh, say, can. I'd like to think that I'd say, whoa, we're going to raid the immediate past president's home like he's some third world dictator? Do we do that here? You want me to stand at the gates of Mar-a-Lago with a long gun and give cover to a bunch of guys that go raiding through Melania's closet? For what now exactly? Why? You just shut up and do it. That's the way we roll. DOJ, oh, see, can you see? I support the rank and file patriots of the... No, I don't. I have real problems with a lot of the rank and file of the FBI, by the way, while we're at it. I don't think they're all pure and clean as the wind-driven snow. I think they deserve to be scrutinized just the same as leadership when leadership tells them to do something that is absolutely unprecedented and unwarranted and unnecessary. And I think if you're a Republican and you can't say that, or you're trying to be too cute by half in front of a confab lecture series and say, well, I support the rank and file of the... And then to say, if the vice president is summoned before the January 6th congressional committee, totally sham committee, and he's not able to say, he started to, he said, well, I remind you, we're three co-equal branches of government. And so I was part of the executive. We're talking about the legislative calling me before them, and I really don't do that. We don't do that. That doesn't happen. I don't have to do that, and I probably would not be inclined to do that. But instead, he didn't do that. He said, well, I guess I'd have to think it over. I'd have to kind of consider it, maybe. The very day Liz Cheney's constituents kick her to the door. I don't know. Folks, it frosts me a little bit. I didn't mean to make the show or today. I'm not really intending to make it about Mike Pence. It's just that Washington Republicans are starting to do it again. They're starting to box themselves in. I can just sense it. And you can too. Mitch McConnell and a lot of Senate Republicans in particular. I can't say the House Republicans are behaving as poorly, but I think the Senate Republicans on balance and Mitch McConnell and kind of a lot of establishment, you know, long tenured Republicans in this town, I can just feel them starting to kind of shrink. They're just kind of accepting premises. They've kind of lost their swagger. I'm hearing the turtle now start to fall back on, well, it's going to be a very divided Senate. No matter what, I don't know that we're going to, I mean, it could go, you know, a little of us or a little of them. I don't know. I'm not really sure if we're already kind of in defensive crouch. And I, for the life of me, if you're a Republican, if you're a Republican running for office or holding office, I don't know why in the world you think you owe anybody any explanation for anything. Because last I checked, if you look around, Republicans aren't running anything. Republicans haven't presided over this inflation. Republicans aren't presiding over this crime. Republicans aren't presiding over a wide open border. Republicans aren't presiding over the failure of Afghanistan, total withdrawal, the whole country being swallowed whole by the Taliban. Republicans don't make gas prices climb to $5 a gallon. Republicans are not cheering and passing new legislation to exacerbate 40-year high inflation. Republicans aren't doing that. Democrats are. And yet, for some reason, I'm starting to sense official Washington Republicans shrinking at just the wrong time. I'm not in the mood for it. No bedwetting welcome here. Democrats are destructive as hell. They must be framed and defined as such and be made to explain themselves. There is nothing going on in this country today for which Republicans have to explain themselves. Nothing. Got it? How do you do? Middle of the week, and I hope you are doing great. My name's Chris Stegall, in for Vince today. Vince is enjoying a week away. I'm enjoying being with you at 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL. Come on in. I want to pick your brain about all that's going on as we try to make sense of the news here. Still to come, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. 5 o'clock for your drive home. Paul Manafort. This is a fascinating and unbelievable story of abuse. You want to talk about abuse by the DOJ? How about being locked away for process crimes, basically, in solitary confinement for 10 months? It's just an amazing story of political persecution. In fact, that's what he's written the book about, and he will be with us to discuss his brand new book and all that he went through after being sent away and President Trump ultimately pardoning him. And as a free man now trying to kind of rebuild his reputation and regain his footing. What does he think of all of this? Ever since he was sent away, several of his former colleagues, and now the raid of President Trump's home, how does he see it all? It should be fascinating to hear his thoughts. Again, 888-630-WMAL is the telephone number. Turning to David Drucker, senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, author of the book In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP. David, I'm glad you're here, and what an apt time to have a book like yours, given the speech we heard last night from Liz Cheney. Dave, I think we have some of that. Give me a little, if you would, please. I'd love, David, to get your reaction to Liz Cheney's parting shots as she went down in defeat last night. Take a listen.
The great and original champion of our party, Abraham Lincoln, was defeated in elections for the Senate and the House before he won the most important election of all. Lincoln ultimately prevailed, he saved our Union, and he defined our obligation as Americans for all of history. Speaking at Gettysburg of the great task remaining before us, Lincoln said that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth. As we meet here tonight, that remains our greatest and most important task.
Okay, so is this Liz Lincoln, and is January 6th her Gettysburg, David Drucker?
Well, I guess we'll have to find out over time. You know, on the one hand, she's got a point. Sometimes people lose and lose pretty badly, and later they rise again like Lazarus and, you know, show everybody that they were consequential figures after all. I think the question from a 2024 context, just all of that aside, is whether or not there's a constituency for Liz Cheney. I don't think there is one. I don't think it has anything to do, necessarily with her conservative voting record on the floor of the House, her leadership of the January 6th committee, and criticism of Donald Trump since the end of the last election, on which she has sort of banked her future and been committed to. you just look at a Republican primary, and they're going to look for, in the Trump era, which I believe we're in, how long, still to be determined, could be short, could be long, but in the Trump era, number one, they're not looking for statesman-like figures of yore, as Liz Cheney positions herself. And, you know, number two, having angered the Republican base the way she has, you're not going to get through a Republican primary. So even if you look at a well-funded independent campaign, I'm not saying she would have one, but even if you look at doing that, it's always been difficult in American politics. Our two-party system is just too entrenched. And look, a lot of Democrats admire Cheney for sticking to her guns and putting her career on the line to go after Trump for you know what they believe is necessary and proper. But, you know, even they will say that they don't agree with her on policy. She did not, you know, I know a lot of Republicans are angry with her, but look at her House voting record. She didn't turn into a liberal. What she did is turn on Donald Trump. So there's not a lot there for Democrats. There's not a lot there for Republicans. And even a third-party bid that tries to put together an independent coalition, there's just no history of success in that. So, look, we will see. She's a Cheney. She's a consequential figure, whether because people like her or people like to hate her. So it'll be interesting to watch. I just don't expect much to come of it, at least not in the near term.
It's notable to me, David Drucker, that she has had raised for this reelection, this primary, she'd raised approximately the bank totals or something like $15 million. She spent exactly half and only half. Now, I don't know what that portends exactly, but that's a substantial amount of dough just sitting around, unspent. I wonder what she intends to do with it.
Yeah, look, it's not bad, but it's not that much. In small states like Wyoming, and in a state like Wyoming, you don't really have to purchase out-of-state expensive media markets that bleed over. I mean, maybe Fort Collins for Cheyenne, I suppose, but there was only so much money to be spent. You know, we saw this in 2020 in the Maine Senate race. The Democratic nominee, she must have raised $100 million because grassroots liberals were so excited about the prospect of beating Susan Collins. And ultimately, she ended up with, like, I don't know, $10 million left over. Not because she was she made any mistakes or you know, could have spent more. There was just no more money to spend in a small state like Maine. So,
yeah.
Liz Cheney has some seed money. This is true. She can start a new political organization, and that could be useful to her and to others who agree with her. But it's not the kind of money we used to think of in politics as, wow, that's a lot of money.
Do you think, David, I really mean this when I ask it. I'm asking a sincere question here. Do you think she's driven by sincerity or something else?
Well, you know, I will tell you, Chris, how I view politicians generally. Right, left, center, in the middle, whatever. I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt and treat them at face value. There's always a chance with any politician that they're not sincere at some level or at any level, that they're just driven by a desire to be in politics for all the reasons, you know, that we can list here that we're well aware of. But, you know, I find Democrat, Republican, whatever, that most politicians come to Washington or go to their state capital with an intent to do good. They think that their agenda is necessary and that people will benefit, which I always say is the hard part. I talk to most voters and they say, you know, if we could just get some honest people in there, that would fix everything. And I say, I hate to break it to you, but most of them are honest, but a lot of them have bad ideas that they think are really good for you. And then nobody knows what to do with that. And so I give Cheney the same benefit of the doubt without, you know, while conceding. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not her shrink. But I give her the same benefit of the doubt I give to Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Mitch McConnell. I mean, I could name any of them, you know, that they go there intending to do good, even though some of them clearly like the limelight, like the crowd. But, hey, that's part of it. You know, it's part of what we do. You know,
right.
I'm telling you things I think are true, but I enjoy being on the radio.
Of course. And I do, too, because I have a fantastic voice and I'm very entertaining. No, I'm kidding. That's just a joke, dude. No, but what I really wonder about someone like Liz Cheney is if I hear this and it's a fair criticism that sometimes we are so fiercely and blindly loyal to our side that we're just not going to hear anything spoken ill of them at all, ever. I think on balance, Republicans are generally better at being introspective and taking criticism and mulling over criticism, almost maybe to a fault in general. But for Liz Cheney to take such a drubbing last night and say she's Lincoln, I was kind of stunned at that kind of hubris. Like, there's no introspection. Like, maybe I got crossways. It's another one of these Washingtonian types that tells an entire swath of voters, I'm Lincoln, I'm superior, I know what I'm doing, and you all have gone bat crap crazy. It's such condescension.
Well, look, I will say this. You know, it's always perilous to compare yourself to Lincoln or FDR or one of the founders, the founding fathers. I mean, Churchill. It's perilous territory. I will say, on the other hand, you know, how many voters have I talked to over the years on the left or the right that say, you know, I just wish they would do what's right and not care whether it costs them re-election.
Yeah,
so,
well, true.
You know, here you have somebody who, if we go with my rule and just take it at face value, was willing to do what she thought was right, even though she had to know for several months that it was costing her re-election and the end of elective office for her. She did it anyway. She doesn't want to go away. She wants to stay in the limelight despite losing. Look, Wyoming is her home state, or at least it has been of late. It's one group of voters. She clearly is speaking to, in her mind, a broader group of voters. There are other politicians we know that have lost re-election and decided that they were still useful and didn't want to go away. We'll see if she has a constituency. I'll get back to this, Chris. You know, she has a lot to say that will interest a lot of people. Turning it into some sort of electoral victory or power to have influence, she has to prove that she can do that, and we don't know that yet.
David Drucker is with us. He's senior political correspondent at the Washington Examiner. His book is In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP. I am very keenly aware, it seems obvious to me, that Democrats believe that the January 6th event is what they will hang around the neck of every Republican. And I believe that every Republican is now going to have to figure out, or should have long since now figured out, how they're going to address this. I think Democrats are perfectly happy to have Trump hang around because they like this issue. And truly, I believe strategically, if they could just wipe the field of Republicans forever with this insurrection talk, that's what they'll do to stay in power in perpetuity. Republicans are going to have a better game plan than, you know, either charging the hill or running from Trump. It seems like there's got to be another way. It's just this Trump litmus test thing they want to trap everybody into. Republicans haven't figured out how to negotiate it yet.
Well, that's true, but that's because I think in part because a lot of Republicans don't necessarily want to say what they really think, so they're always trying to straddle the line. I mean, look, Republican voters clearly are very fond of Donald Trump, but Republican elected officials, though fond of Donald Trump's legislative and policy agenda, are not always very fond of him and always looking over their shoulder. I think Republicans are doing just fine. You know, they won 15 House seats last cycle and ended up putting Democrats in the position where they were in the majority but not a governing majority. They were on the cusp of holding the Senate majority, and, you know, things got a little crosswise in Georgia. They're on track to win back the House this cycle, possibly the Senate as well. They should be in a good position to compete for the White House in 2024. They win lots of elections, and Democrats and Republicans, to my mind, seem to approach every election as though this could be the end of it. We're going to be out of power forever. What do we do about this? And they seem to forget that you won 2 years ago and 4 years ago and 10 years ago. And every time the winner somehow thinks they're going to be in power forever, the loser thinks it's curtains forever. And it just never works out that way. Republicans should do well this November. And then there's going to be another election 2 years from now when they could do very well again. And I think if they focus on things that voters care about, inflation, gas prices, rising crime, and just keep it there. I mean, these things will take care of itself. You meet voters where they are, and they usually reward you.
That's it. I'm sorry. I just think what you're saying, not to pat myself on the back and sound like I'm pandering here, but that simple thing that you just said is exactly right. It's defining what Democrats are doing right now rather than making it about yourself. I just don't feel like often Republicans are very good at taking it on offense and making them explain themselves. Democrats are running the show. They're driving this bus, and they need to explain the bus trip. I don't know why Republicans would ever allow themselves to be boxed in with Mar-a-Lago raids or anything else. Which brings me to, I guess, one of my last questions for you, David Drucker. I heard Newt Gingrich kind of lamenting with Hannity last night, which was sort of interesting to me. This is just kind of in the grass politics stuff. They seem to both be irritated that Mitch McConnell will not be more helpful or more aggressive in sort of a national messaging push for Republican Senate candidates. They thought McCarthy was kind of on board. I share the observation that you just did, that it seems like as a party, the Republicans all, wherever you live, wherever you're running, it seems like they all should have a pretty united message. Look what the Democrats are doing to us. And yet I guess they're saying Mitch McConnell's not really on board for some reason. You know anything about that?
Well, look, McConnell is a keen political tactician. You may disagree with his policies, think he can do a better job, but he pays attention to this stuff very closely, for whatever that's worth. I will say this. I think McConnell's approach and the approach of Republican leadership in the Senate is different than the House. You know, in the House, nobody really knows who's running. It kind of requires more of a nationalized cookie cutter message. I think that what McConnell and Republican leadership is trying to allow Republican Senate candidates to do is to run the races they feel are best in their states. And if you're running in Pennsylvania versus Arizona versus Ohio versus Georgia, you want to be talking about the same things, and they should: inflation, gas prices, you know, Biden incompetence, all of that stuff. But you may want to do it in a different way than your colleague does it. You know, Ohio is a pretty red state these days. J.D. Vance can talk about these things in ways that may not work for Herschel Walker in Georgia, which is now a bona fide swing state. And I think that the nature of the Senate is we're senators. We're not going to tell each other what to do that often. You're Senate candidates. You know your states. Let me know how I can be helpful. Let me know if you need money. But you do you. And you know, people can criticize that approach and that strategy, and that's viable criticism. But I think it comes from a place of wanting these candidates to run the kind of races they think that are necessary based on the different conditions of the states that they are in.
Final question, David Drucker, and that is 2024, do you think Trump runs? Do you think Democrats really want to stop him from it, or do they think that's a gift? And I'll double up and ask at the same time, will anyone step in to challenge him? Someone like Glenn Youngkin is often rumored to do so.
I think Trump will have challengers. I don't think that he is going to keep everybody away from running, because when people want to run for president, they want to run. I tend to think these days he's more likely to run than not, whereas I used to sort of be in a 50-50 camp. I mean, he basically said he's going to run. It's just, when do I announce? And I think Democrats are of two minds. I mean, some Democrats, you know, talk to will say that a Trump candidacy scares them because he obviously could win, and him in the White House scares them. And other Democrats will say, gee, I hope it's him, because he's somebody we can unite around. It fires us up no matter who our nominee is, and he has so many flaws. He's somebody we can beat. You end up with a fresh face, effective governor or other kind of politician on the Republican side who's a change agent and the change candidate in the way Trump was in 2016. And that's going to be much tougher, especially, you know, coming out of the Biden years. So it sort of depends on which Democrats you talk to.
But if Trump says he wants it, you don't think there's any stopping him?
Well, I think it's possible he could be stopped. I think it depends on who runs against him, and do they run the kind of race that might cause Republican voters to take a second look and say, maybe we love Trump and his agenda, but maybe it'd be good to have somebody new who could serve eight full years. But if nobody runs, or if you don't take Trump head on and show Republican voters that you're a fighter and you're not cowering, then it's not going to work.
That's going to be fascinating, and I hope we can continue to talk to you about it. David Drucker with a great book, In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP. He's senior political correspondent at the Washington Examiner. Thanks for your time today.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, you know the number, 888-630-WMAL, 888-630-9625, still to come. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North will be with us. Paul Manafort will be with us, and you, I hope, will be with us.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.